Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Space Gods. I am your host, Hercules Invictus. Hercules and the Space Gods is a voyage of discovery that is currently unfolding through our podcasts on Mount Olympus and CERN, select chapters in paranormal anthologies, a variety of live, now Zoom events, and several articles published in various magazines over the past few years. Hercules and the Space Gods, like all our other cosmic initiatives, supports all of humanity's efforts to transcend this world and venture forth into the great beyond, be they metaphysical, mechanical, or even imaginal. And tonight, I'm proud to introduce my next guest, Olav Phillips. And he is a writer, an editor, a paranormal explorer and theorist. And he is now, from what I can gather, also an NLP practitioner and a hypnotherapist. Welcome, Olav. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Hercules. How are you?
I'm doing great. I missed talking to you. It's been quite a while. Time zooms by so fast.
It does. We need to talk on a more regular basis.
I agree, and so we have to make that happen. I think it's awesome that you became a hypnotherapist and an NLP practitioner. I've been contemplating that path myself for quite a while, so I can learn from you as you move forward with it.
Yes, I need far more practice. Going through training is one thing. Using it is another.
but
I was interested in the...
No, I was about to say you'll do great with it. I know that.
Well, thank you. I just see it as tools in the tool belt to try to understand, you know, this reality and how we're trying to move through it.
With hypnotherapy, you can take people like to past lives, to other planets and other universes. Its applications seem endless, and it's really good in helping people overcome habits as well.
Yeah, you know, I'm curious. A lot of the reason that I took it, I took two different types of hypnotherapy, standard hypnotherapy and Ericksonian hypnotherapy.
Okay.
And I took them because I was interested. It actually started with, like, you know, like everything else, I saw this show and I was curious how he did it. And you know, the applications of it are tremendous. I mean, there's so many things, even for yourself, that you can unlock.
I became interested in hypnotherapy when I was giving a talk in a local library, and I took people through like a guided visualization, and somebody asked me if I was a hypnotherapist, and I said, no, what's a hypnotherapist? So they explained it to me, and it seems that like the guided journeys that I take people on occasion are something the hypnotherapists do. And since then, we've had several on the show, and I found out that somebody I knew who'd written a play I starred in as Samson, she was a hypnotherapist too at some point. So I was telling my wife, I got to look into hypnotherapy, you know, what's accredited and so forth. So it's awesome.
Well,
that.
You know, what was interesting to me is that in going through the NLP, the neuro-linguistic programming, and hypnotherapy classes, is how similar it is to, you know, to trances, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that when somebody is in a hypnotic state, it's very, very, very similar to when somebody is in a trance state.
Yeah,
it's just in a trance state. You know, you're receiving messages and relaying the message. We're in a hypnotherapy state. You're in a more suggestive mode, but the how the person reacts, the way that they physically change, it's very similar. I mean, when they would go through the exercises, like this is like when I you know, meditate or do the Ganzfeld, it's very similar.
What's the Ganzfeld? I'm familiar with meditation, but I haven't come across that term before.
So the Ganzfeld experiment is, just to give it to you basically, it's this idea where you isolate yourself, you put on headphones with white noise. And then they use the ping pong balls. But, you know, when I first started to do it, I used just an eye mask, and you put yourself into a relaxed state. And once you're in that relaxed state, it's a kind of waking trance. And you actually, depending on the person, of course, I mean, it changes for everybody. But in my case, I go to the in-between, and I just call it the ether, but it's kind of the in-between. It's like a black void, and I can feel myself floating in the black void. And once you're in that black void, you know, you can pierce the veil and go to other places and ask questions and get answers. And, you know, it's a kind of intermediate state between you and whoever you're trying to talk to. And you can see things, you can smell things, you can touch things. I mean, and I won't get into the detail of it, but, you know, in one case, I actually was doing it, and I guess manifested, for lack of a better term, inside of an apartment. And I could smell it. I could feel it. I can tell you exactly how it was laid out, where everything was. You know, I walked into a room, into a bathroom that was like steamed up. I could feel the steam on my skin. All the same time, I still could feel myself tethered to my body, laying on my bed with the headphones in my ears. So it's a very interesting experience.
Oh, wow. I have to look into that. I meditate twice a day also, and I perform like deeper relaxation, and have found like various levels, but I haven't experienced anything as intense as what you've just described. And I've experienced lots of intense things, but that sounds wild.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, I use it to interface with the secret chiefs of the Third Order, or the Archangel Haniel. But, you know, really, I mean, I've guided people through the process, and typically, you know, what people want to see is their spirit animal or their spirit guide, and that usually will manifest. In my case, I have a white timber wolf with blue eyes.
Awesome.
That shows up. Yeah, and actually, oddly, I share the same spirit animal, apparently, with Alan Greenfield. We've had many discussions about this. But, it came. I mean, I could see it. You know, it was right there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had guided people through it, and they've seen sea serpents and all kinds of stuff. I think the best one that I ever guided somebody through, I did it on Shasta, the summit, and the mountain spoke to her.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was in a situation. Yeah, she was in a situation where she needed to make a life-changing decision to go down one path or the other. And the mountain, whoever that was, the mountain spoke to her and made it clear. So it was pretty powerful.
That is incredible. It sounds like a lot of fun too, and not being bound by time and space. And there are places dreams can take you, places astral projection can take you, places lucid dreams can take you. But this sounds like a new place, and a very intense and healing place as well.
It is. I mean, you know, when many times when I've gotten in a position where, you know, I stagnated, or I didn't know what to do, or something happened and I needed help rationalizing it, you know, I would do that. I would do the Gansfeld, and the answer's there. What I would suggest, though, is if anybody attempts it, like you, if you're going to do it, you know, have your wife there monitoring you and just watching and making sure that, you know, you're doing okay, just in case. You know, it's always good to do with somebody there. It's very powerful. It's very moving too. I remember I asked at one point with the whole, you know, situation with the world, I was like, you know, what's going on? I mean, you ask the question in a natural language. So, you know, I was like, what's going on? You know, tell me in terms that I can understand. And what I saw was like a film montage of like, you know, CNN or MSNBC or whoever, you know, people talking with headlines on the bottom of the screen and, you know, papers. And, you know, it was all very positive that, like, we beat it, you know, everything's okay. So, you know, it does manifest interesting things. I mean, you can ask it anything. You know, I once asked, you know, it's kind of a silly question, but I'm like, who's my soulmate, right?
Uh-huh.
And the response back I got was actually fascinating because, you know, a lot of people believe that there's this one person out in the universe that they're meant to be with. And what I saw actually was like a scrolling, best way I can describe it is like a scrolling film strip of people. And it was just scrolling with pictures of people or short videos of people. And every once in a while, like it would slow down. And every mm-hmm. so often it would speed up and then slow down. And the sense I got, because you just kind of innately understand like what you're seeing, the sense I got is you have a lot of them. And, you know, the ones where it would slow down are stronger. The ones where it would speed up are weaker. But, you know, like I said, there's a lot of information there if you're willing to be brave and to actually try it.
Oh, you've opened up a new door for me to go through now. I Googled it while I was talking to you, so I got the spelling and I got links. So after the show, that's the first thing I'm going to do. I'm going to check that out because that sounds wild. And with the therapy and with the NLP, that opens up a lot of doors. I remember when NLP first came out, Bandler mm-hmm. and Grindler, I think their names were. And
Grindler, yeah.
The books and, you know, being very impressed. And they were very impressed with Erickson, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they based a lot of it on Erickson's hypnosis technique. Because the thing about Ericksonian hypnosis is that it's achieved through a normal conversation. That it's not done like, you know, you get the pendulum and you swing it. Because really the whole method of the pendulum swinging or any of those things is to focus.
Right.
Right. It's just a tool for focusing. And the more you focus, the more you kind of like blot out the rest of the world. And then you're so fixated on it that your subconscious opens up and now you can make them descend into a relaxed state. And then, you know, you can start to like interface the subconscious directly. But yeah, no, they were very impressed with Erickson because he achieved it through natural language, like just having a conversation.
Mm-hmm. I have to dig up my NLP books now. They're somewhere in a box in the basement. I used to be in the human services for like 35 years of my career. So I was very uh-huh. much in different modalities of helping people. And NLP was kind sure. of avant-garde and fringy at the time.
Still is a little bit.
The Structure of Magic, I remember, I think was the first couple of yep. books in that series. And then they had like mm-hmm. a lot more. Then I kind of lost track of it. Wow. You mentioned the Secret Chief. So is that Secret Chiefs are part of esoteric Western traditions? So are you referring to a particular tradition? Like, obviously, it's a form of Hermeticism, like all Western magic, but are the Secret
right.
Chiefs belonging, you said the Third Circle or the Third Order?
Third Order.
Third Order.
So for myself, right, you know, I have been working with Greenfield for a while to kind of hone it. You know, it mm-hmm. came to me accidentally. And it's, the way that it works for me is a little odd, but no, it's legit and real. And I guess if I had to like call myself something, I guess I'd be a free illuminist with nature bends.
Okay.
So what that is it's a non-hierarchical, mystery school kind of organization that Greenfield founded, and it's not, I think he founded it, but there's no hierarchy. It's not like you're a fourth degree of this or a 33rd degree of that. It's more about the knowledge than achieving levels. that it, you know, it's about an, about the exploration, and it, you know, you're learning, but you don't have to go through levels and politics and things that you find in some of these other more organized organizations.
We have Jean-Louis de Biasi. He's the high magician in the Aurum Solis and also in the Rosicrucian order. He comes on the show, once a month for a theurgy forum, and then like with some other topics. So I have to include you in some of our conversations. I have conversations with magicians on and off the podcast. So since you're there, that'd be great. It'd be great to include you and get your perspective and get your thoughts on various things. Invisibly, because they don't really advertise what they're doing, a lot of folks who are into hermetic magic or high magic, as it's called, they've been doing all they can to help the influx of souls who have died because of the pandemic. And they're doing a lot of things they're not getting any recognition or credit for, to try to, you know, make things better, because we're living during very challenging times.
Very. And, you know, for me, what I've been trying to do is more on the spiritual alchemy end of it, and trying to put out the good, you know, the good energy into the space, and to help people, you know, see this whole thing as being transformative, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, a lot of people, whether it's in social media or that I know, they feel very down and downtrodden, you know, and I'm trying to send them energy and start to get them to see, you know, that there is something beyond this, and to transform themselves, you know, to become, you know, the powerful, amazing people that they are.
So you're doing the invisible magician work too. That's awesome.
Trying, you know, I, you know, I get really tired at the end of the day. There's a lot of energy to send out.
Yes, there is. I have a on Facebook. I do other stuff besides, but on Facebook, I give a blessing every day that's tied to the planetary spirits, you know, through the Olympian pantheon. And just continue to send out positivity. I try to keep everything as positive as I can. Don't know how much of a difference it makes in the world, but I get emails that people thank me, you know, that it brightened up their day or it made them think of something. So, you know, I'm going to keep doing it for whatever it does.
You know, I get a lot of, you know, I get a lot of people that message me, or they will respond, you know, and they say, well, it made a huge difference. You know, and I founded a hermetic lodge called the Celestial Lodge of Sirius to explore this stuff even more. So, you know, I made the charter of the lodge to explore and understand, you know, these things around us. Because, like, to me, right, you're talking about the invisible magicians, you know, to me, like, when I think about it, you know, a lot of people, and I'll catch flack for this, but a lot of people, you know, they see the, like, hermeticism and magic and things like that as kind of a religion. And, like, to me, it's not. Like, to me, it's perfectly congruent with whatever your belief system is. Because the way I see it is that someday in the past, you know, that these things were normal and we knew how to use them and we understood them. But over time, it was lost. So we have this arcana of how we access this stuff. But it, to me, it's more of like a form of science versus religion. You know, that energy does exist. I mean, I can teach somebody in 20 minutes how to make an energy ball, right? That's like 101, you know? And they feel it, and they can actually feel it and experience it. And it's like, oh, this is real. It's like, well, yeah, it really is.
Yeah, the
energy, is, but,
You know, because once somebody's experienced that, it's unlike anything that they've experienced before. And there it is.
Right.
You can't deny it.
No, I mean, your hands are heating up. You know, in most all cases, your hands are heating up. You can feel the pressure on your hands. Your hands kind of tense up, right? you know, in some more rare cases, you know, they feel the electrification of their hands as they're manipulating the ball. So, you know, it is something that's very easy to do. And, you know, it shows you that it really does exist. And like I said, just like you, you know, I put out positivity and the positivity comes back and people tell me, well, it made a difference. And that feels good, you know?
Yeah, it does. And a lot of people think that there's nothing they could do. We were talking about this on the show the other night, too, that, you know, basically try to make your world as good a place as you possibly can. I mean, we're human. None of us are perfect. You know, we can't be positive all the time, although we aim for it.
No.
But to the extent that you're able to, you know, try to make the world a pleasant place for the people who live in your world, you know, immediately.
Right.
Your friends, your coworkers, your neighbors, you know, whatever, however wide your circle is, you have a much bigger circle because of what you do. But if you just try to create a better world for them, then, you know, if they do the same or if a fraction do the same, it'll bring a lot of positivity to the world around us.
It will. And, you know, it's funny. It's in once you start sending out the good energy, you know, the positivity is infectious. I mean, I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I get frustrated, I get angry, I get tired, I get sad, you know, but when I'm in the in-between, I'm always trying to send good vibes and good energy out to the, you know, good mojo, right, to the people around me. And it's infectious.
The in-between, like my interpretation of it based on my own experience, is like those in-between states between waking and sleeping, let's say. You know, is that what you mean, or do you mean something else?
Well, if I'm in the in-between, like I'm doing something like with the Gansfeld, or I'm concentrating and I'm trying to enter the, you know, the quote-unquote ether, that in-between is it's a place, and it's somewhere – it's somewhere between the conscious reality that we have and what's beyond. And what I don't know is what's beyond that wall, right? That the whatever you're dealing with is coming through the wall. Sometimes you see cracks in the wall, you can kind of see what's on the other side, but it's kind of a meeting place between, you know, two different realities. Your daily conscious, I go to work, I put gas in my car, I have to go make dinner, I have to pay my bills kind of reality. And then there's more like spiritual realm. It's kind of a comfy place in between. But, and the other connotation to me is that when I'm in between, you know, my emotions, right, that I'm not happy and I'm not sad, I'm just normal. Because it's okay to be just normal, right? That there's this kind of, you know, Western push that we're supposed to be happy all the time. And it's not true. So like when I'm in the in-between space emotionally between being happy and being sad, when I'm just content or I'm just okay, you know, even then I'm trying to send the good energy out to people, because the state that you're in very much affects the energy that you're projecting out. So if you're in a bad place, you're projecting chaotic, bad energy. If you're in a good place, you're projecting more radiant, good energy. If you're in the in-between, you're just normal, then you're projecting stable energy, right? So, you know, people need all three, or you're not whole.
Oh, that is awesome. That is incredible. When you take people on these journeys, do you follow a particular script, or do you improvise you know, depending on the person and, you know, where they're at?
You know, I always improvise it because, I'm not one. So I have a weird duality, right? I studied sociocultural anthropology. So I know the rituals, I know the dogma, and I love the rituals and I love the dogma, like the history and all that. But I find that for myself, that the application of it is an on the spot individual thing. I'm not one to follow a script or to you know, to engage in a process. That I think it's more effective for me if I'm kind of going with the flow. Because for, you know, when I'm doing it right, if I'm going with the flow, you know, the universe is guiding both of us, me and the person who's trying to see something. So we're letting the universe influence the path. Where if I go down the path of using a ritual or using a, you know, a process or a, you know, a standard operating procedure, I'm arbitrarily limiting what the experience will be.
I improvise also when I do my thing. You know, yeah. I let the spirit move me, and people afterwards say that a lot of significant stuff came out. I don't know if you practice
right.
doing the mystical journeys with groups. But if you have you tried that yet?
So the largest group that I ever led was four people, and I Ganzfeld it. Well, I don't know what else to call it, right? That it's not strictly the Ganzfeld, but let's say this entering this kind of semi-trance, like a waking. It's like waking sleeping. I mean, it's hard to explain. But it's like a waking trance. You're completely awake, unlike a normal trance. You're completely conscious. You're not descending down into a trance, a meditative trance. I mean, you're completely conscious. You can hear things around you if you take the headphones out. When I've done it, right? The largest group I ever did was four at once. And you know, and obviously while I'm doing it, I'm putting out protective energy and guidance and whatever. And oddly, even though they were all listening to white noise, they could still hear me, which I think is very fascinating.
Yes.
But no, the largest group I did was four, but it should work. It shouldn't, the size shouldn't matter, because it's not like in that context, it's not like I'm guiding you specifically saying, well, hey, Hercules, you know, I want you to picture yourself standing on the top of a mountain, you know, holding a flaming torch. It's more like, you know, okay, just breathe deeply, you know. So it's a bit more generic. I mean, it's going to be more powerful one-on-one. But I don't really think that the size would really matter. It's like distance, right? Distance doesn't really matter either. I've done experiments where I projected energy over the wire. You know,
oh, wow.
Around the world, and it still worked. That what we were trying to achieve occurred, you know, because you're, remember, all this stuff is based on intent. Like it's will and intent. It's all about will and intent, and whatever your intent is, it translates into what you're trying to manifest. And I seriously did it over Skype around the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Distance is irrelevant in the ether. The ether space has no concept of time, space, distance. All that is irrelevant. You know, it's completely irrelevant. That in between space, it is a space out of time, out of space. You know, there is no kind of, you know, measurements.
Shelley Kerr, she's been on the show a few times. She's known as the past life lady.
Okay.
She's written a lot of books with her other non-past life, you know, experiences and experiments. And I picked up a bunch of her books and I read them, and they're awesome for the, you know, exploring the realms that you're describing. And some of the better an astral projection also give you lots of information on, you know, basically separating your consciousness. And you don't really need to imagine yourself floating above your body and attached to the silver cord and, you know, all that type of stuff.
Right.
That's a safety thing, you know, that you can create with your mind so that you feel connected. Because one of the fears, you know, when people explore other realms and they lose touch with their, you know, their regular thought process and their body, and they're in another place, they're afraid that they won't be able to get back in, or while they're out, something else will get back in. You know, so that whole, I think the whole silver cord thing is a way of dealing with that fear and moving past.
You know, the thing that I found, I've only successfully astrally projected once. And it was a very strange experience. But when I go into that waking trance state, I can still feel my body And you don't feel, because it's first person, like you don't see yourself floating over your body or anything. It's more like you just kind of emerge. One of the reasons I like it is because it's very easy. Like there's a lot of ease that you just, I don't know, you just kind of emerge into this void. And then, you know, the difference that I found between the astral projection experience and the ether experience, the waking trance experience, is that in the astral projection experience that I had, I completely left my body. I mean, I was flying through space.
Right? Uh-huh.
It's more like I'm just existing in this void. And for me personally, and it's a personal experience, right? For everybody it's different. But for me, it's more like when I'm in there, I can see, if I want to see my spirit animal, right, it will appear.
Maybe. Mm-hmm.
You know, he can be a bit cagey, but he'll appear and I can interact with him. Or I will see pictures or movies,
mm-hmm.
right? Only one time in there did I actually enter a space. And that's when I entered that apartment. That it, you know, I was in that space and it was me. And it was all first person. There was no like floating over your body or silver cords or anything like that. I just was there. There's something comforting about that, right? Because the astral projection experience, I'm flying through space and I'm like, I was literally looking around going, what the hell am I doing? You know? It's more, you know what it's like? It's more like if you attempt a remote view.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Right? You kind of see a picture in front of you and it's pixelated and blurry and it starts to like sharpen. And as it's sharpening, you can start to see the detail. And as you see the detail, you kind of get the message.
Lately in my dreams and in my morning meditations, I've been in a state similar to what you're describing. I'm aware that I'm lying down on the bed meditating, you know, so
right.
There's a total awareness of my body.
Mm-hmm.
I'm definitely past the alpha that, you know, you normally meditate in. I'm like someplace else. And while I'm there,
right.
I get thoughts and dreams and images that are very real. It's kind of like when you're in the
right.
hypnagogic state, which is where most visionary experiences take place, that between
mm-hmm.
waking and sleeping, you know, time. It was very interesting because, again, I was fully conscious that I was awake, but I was dreaming. And I could you know,
right.
basically enter or not enter the dreams. I could just watch them as an observer, or I could answer them as a participant. And then when I answer them as a participant, it's you kind of like with any dream or even waking experience, you get caught up in the dream or waking logic, and then you're experiencing
right.
that. But I was both participant and observer simultaneously. And that's been happening in both my dreams and my meditative states lately. So what you're describing, I'm going to explore it because it promises, again, new vistas and new
yeah.
experiences, which is great.
That's, you know, to me, that's what it's all about. You know, I don't want to put anybody down for ayahuasca or anything like that, right? If that's what you choose to do, you know, safely and under supervision and with the advice of a medical professional, you go right ahead. But for me personally, I don't need it. Like I can do it using this waking trance method that I can experience all the things that I'm wanting to experience and I can get the answers that I want to get. And I can traverse planes, I can traverse realities, there's a guy with a motorcycle. I can do all these things and it's very interesting to explore. But at the end of the day, you know, I am after the knowledge. I want to push the envelope and try to see what really is out there.
Now, getting back to the secret chiefs, I experience beings like that, but the system that they've chosen to express themselves through, or that I am most receptive to their experiencing themselves through, is basically either the mythic Olympian or the theosophical system. Theosophy doesn't have secret chiefs, but it has ascended masters, which are basically secret chiefs.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Because I've explored other mysteries. Like I got involved in the runic and Norse mysteries for a couple of decades, and I've explored other systems as well. The Arthurian, I spent a good half decade on that, and the Grail mysteries. The invisibles will assume a form that you can work with.
Yes, and early on when I was starting to experience these things, you know, when I was working with Greenfield on it, that's basically the gist of it that I got, is that they're manifesting, you know, they're ascended masters, right? But they're manifesting themselves in ways comfortable to me that I can rationalize.
Right.
And one of the bizarre outputs of that is that we have a joke that I get taught by balloon. So as you journey down these pathways, one of the things that you become is hyper aware,
yes,
of the things around you, because you start to realize that there are messages around you. They don't make it easy to see, but if you're aware, you see them. And I started to find balloons, and the balloons are each representative of specific things. And usually when I get a balloon, you know, it corresponds to something occurring. And whether I can figure out beforehand what's going to occur by looking at the symbolism of it, you know, or not, it still occurs. And when it occurs and I don't figure it out, after it occurs, and it'll be something bizarre, but after it occurs, I'll be like, okay, now I get the balloon. So, for example, there's a there's a secret cipher that I cracked. So I over the years, I've become quite involved in the secret cipher, the UFO knots, the NAC cipher. And in the process of doing that, I actually found a new cipher, and I've been exploring that new cipher. But when I oddly cracked the cipher while I was on a conference call, and after the conference call was over, I drove down the street to get some gas. You know, I try to let people know that I'm a normal human being, right? You know, I'm not walking around in linen outfits. I'm wearing my plaid shirt and my shorts, right? I look like a lumberjack. I don't look like somebody in diaphanous robes, you know, like with a halo above my head. So I drove down to the gas station to get gas, and when I got there, on the way out, there was a balloon, and it was a congratulations graduating 2020 balloon, and it was like, oh, I graduated, right? You know, the symbolism is clear: be happy, celebrate, you just graduated. So
yes,
you know, I find those bizarre balloons all over. It's weird.
Those are great when you get those, and everybody has a different one. I've had like a couple over the years. The most bizarre, and like the one that had the most amount of proof behind it, is I kept finding prehistoric hammers. So, you know, when I would get like a prehistoric hammer, and in Europe I found a few, so that can be expected. Because Europe, okay, I'm sure people have been there for thousands of years and using prehistoric hammers.
Right.
But I found some in America too. I was in Long Island one day, and I was communing with the universe, and I asked for a sign in terms of the direction that I was going. And, you know, I looked down, and the sun like hit this rock, and I went and picked up the rock, and it was a prehistoric hammer with the middle sculpted out so they could put branches around it and tie them with leather. That was the coolest, and they're all on my altar now. I got a few of them, and then the other one, and this is one that a lot of people have reported to me, is feathers.
Feathers falling from the sky, or finding them,
or being in your path, and they're colors. And initially, it's like dark feathers and light feathers. And once you figure that out, you'll start getting blue feathers and red feathers. And, you know, once you understand the ABCs, you know, you'll start getting more complex signals. But yes, you're absolutely right. You know, with you, it's balloons. And later on, who knows, it might be something else. But that's how the universe communicates. My most
It's strange.
Yes,
it's strange.
Did I tell you my million-dollar story?
No.
Okay. I was once talking with the universe, and I was not feeling 100% positive that day. And I kind of asked the universe, why can't I have like millions of dollars? You know, and just this way I can make doing what I'm doing a lot easier, you know, than dealing with a conventional reality and so forth. What happened was, within a couple of days, million-dollar bills started coming into my life. Of course, they were all fake million-dollar bills, but they were like million-dollar bills with President Obama on them, with the Statue of Liberty on them, with like all sorts of stuff. People gave me chocolate bars with million-dollar bills with the Statue of Liberty. So this happened for like a long period of time, and it kept happening.
Sure.
Until I said, okay, I get it. So it proved to me that there is something listening, and that it is something responsive, you know, to our interaction with it, but that it has a sense of humor. And I guess for whatever reason, it decided that at that particular point in my life, I did not need for millions of dollars to come raking into my existence.
Well, I always tell people, you know, there's a consensus of belief that, you know, if you go out, manifesting things is one thing, but if you go out and you think hard enough or pray hard enough or want bad enough, that you're going to get whatever you want, right? And the thing that I always tell people is that the universe gives you what you need, not what you want. You know, so in your case, you needed a laugh.
Yes.
And you got one.
And I got
one. You know, when this all started for me, the first balloon I ever found, my son and I were in the forest on the side of a mountain, far away from anyone. And we found a happy birthday balloon. And the symbolism was clear. Happy birthday. You just got born. And then we drove, and we were driving through a stretch of California near a place called Alturas. There is nothing there. I mean, it literally... there's no towns, there's no gas stations, there's nothing. It's just on one side it was forest, on the other side it was a field, or it's just all forest and there's no people. Like, you could have a picnic in the middle of the highway. There's just nothing there, right? And there was a blue star balloon. And the night before, I had been contemplating this hermetic lodge, that I wanted to have this hermetic lodge and explore hermeticism and magic and, you know, all these things. And I had decided to found it and had a very long conversation about this and come to terms with the fact I really needed to do it. And so I'm driving along, and what do I see hanging 40 feet up in a pine tree? I see a blue star balloon.
Oh, wow.
And next to it was, was a sports balloon. And it was clear. I wanted to call it the Celestial Lodge of Sirius, after the star Sirius.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was going to take teamwork. And not long after that, you know, I have a friend who is helping me with the lodge, and she, you know, she started to, you know, become more involved in magic herself, that she was interested in, but she had not done anything with it for a long time. And suddenly she was like, hey, you know, I want to help you with this. I want to do this stuff too. And, you know, and talk about it and think about it and explore it and whatever. And, you know, and it's like, it came to pass, you know, that I called it Sirius, the blue star, and it takes teamwork, you know? So, and the graduation balloon or heart balloons, or I found, I was walking the dog one day and I came across this very large like balloon thing that somebody had bought with the number 11. Like, it was, I guess somebody had an 11th birthday, and instead of taking this very expensive balloon, you know, like balloon thing, that they had left it by the garbage can. But to me, it's like gold 11. It's like 11 is the number of magic. It's like golden magic. And it was surrounded by hearts and all this other stuff. And, you know, there was confetti inside of them. And after that, I got even more entrenched in the magic, right? So, you know, they send messages, and if you're brave enough to listen and to act on them, things happen.
And I got a bunch of messages for what I'm doing through your story that you were sharing. So now I'm contemplating all the information. I'll share some of it. I'm a Lemnian Greek, and that's the island where the Argonauts landed with the Amazon women.
Right.
And they stayed there for a couple of years. They took a break from their Argonaut voyage, like after they barely started, because hey, they had an island full of Amazons. But anyway, the Amazon, the children of the Amazons were ousted, and they left, and they went down to Africa, and they interbred with the Dogon tribe, and the Dogon tribe, the ones that knew about Sirius,
right.
They knew that there were, you know, like several suns there in Sirius, and we didn't know that until fairly recently. And they retained memory, according to some people who had researched them early on, of the Argonauts coming and settling among them. And with the amphibious creatures they described, Lemnos is one of the locations where the mer people lived in antiquity, mythical antiquity. So there's all these parallels, and blue is the color of the Iranian Hercules, or the Elohim Hercules of the Neo-Theosophists, which is what I'm attuned to, you know, presently. And the things I'm doing are astro-mythological, so the star. So I was thinking some things before, and you answered my question through your images. So thank you.
No problem at all. You know, I've been told I have that effect. I've been told that I have that effect on people, that you know, I'll tell a story, right? And they'll suddenly, it answers some like question that they had that they never really like figured out on a more metaphysical or alternative paranormal Fortean kind of topic. I'll tell a story, and then it'll be like, I'll give you an example. I have a bunch of Bigfoot stuff inside my house, and I had hired a guy today to come over and to change some power plugs, right? Because my house is older, and I have two prong sockets. I wanted three, and so he's like, Has somebody here seen Bigfoot? And I'm like, well, yeah, I saw it. And he's like, where did you see it? And he starts asking me all these questions. By the time he left 2 hours later, he's like, I'm going where you went. I want to see this. And he's like, going to make this journey. You know, so yeah, it happens. It's weird.
And we're in a very similar place right now. You know, I'm working with magicians and lodges, and you know, basically the a lot of the questions in terms of a lot of the old knowledge is encapsulated in ethnic myths, and we need to somehow move beyond that. You know, we need to, you know, because again, the Olympianism resonates with me most powerfully. But I'm learning through the Olympic symbols and pantheon, but the understandings are beyond Olympianism. They're human or they're divine. Some of our theurgy forms, and theurgy is what the ancients called high magic. You know, it means doing divine work. So we have theurgy forums once a month where I have a bunch of theurgists, discussing these things. So we've been wrestling with that. How do you present this ancient knowledge in a way that's relevant, that doesn't further divide humanity in this time of polarization? So, you know, we're wrestling with those. So I'm really looking forward to including you on those conversations, because
that'd be lovely. I mean, you know, from my point of view, the one thing that I've always stuck to is that these things are experiential in nature, and they. You know, I tell people that they manifest in the way that is best for you. that it's perfectly congruent with whatever your belief system is. If you are Wiccan, you might see the Green Man, or, you know, you might see some of the, might see fairies, or, you know, if you're Norse, you might see the Norns, or you might see Thor or Freya or Odin, or, you know, whatever. Or in your case, you know, you might see Zeus or Hercules or Athena or whatever, you know. So it's, you know, to me, it's just like using a translator piece of software where you want to say hello. And it's like, well, okay, well, you say konnichiwa in Japanese or hola in Spanish or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. You know, it's the same word. It's just however it makes sense to you. And I think that understanding that and embracing that concept that, you know, no matter what we are, right, you know, whether you're an Anglican or a Catholic or, you know, Baptist or Shinto, you know, you're really ultimately ending up in the same place. And that's the pantheon kind of model that, you know, while we call them Jupiter, you might call them Zeus, you might call them Odin or Woden or whatever. You know, it ultimately comes back to it's the universe, and it manifests in ways that make sense to you.
That's exactly how I see it as well. Yeah, because I've wandered through and experienced many different pantheons, or many different types of spiritual experience. And for a while, sure. I felt like playing hide and seek with my own personal God. You know, I would get into something and then see that my God was there in the disguise of a Norse person, you know, and so forth in different cultures. And the ancients did that as well. So it's kind of like my preferred thing. So it's like exercise. I like lifting weights and doing things like that, but that's not the only way to exercise. Some people like aerobics, some people like running, some people, yeah, whatever your sport happens to be, as long as you get yourself fit, it doesn't matter what path appeals to you and takes you there.
Well, I'll give you a great example. You know, for me personally, you know, it manifests in balloons or, you know, 93s, 3s, 9s, whatever. You know, that's how it manifests to me generally. But early mm-hmm. on, like, I went through something that was somewhat painful. And one day I said, well, you know what, I'm Scandinavian. I mean, my name is Olav, right? I'm Norwegian and I'm Swedish. And I thought, hey, you know what, I'm going to ask Thor for some help. So I said, Thor, you know, and I invoked Thor the proper way. And I felt better. But then, you know, I was feeling lonely, you know, I wanted, you know, to find the person for me or whatever. And, you know, I did it again. I'm like, well, you know what? It worked the first time, you know, maybe she'll fall out of the sky, whatever. So I did it a second time. And when I did the same thing, you know, help me get through this painful period, help me deal with being kind of lonely and whatever. And, you know, I didn't really feel anything. And so I'm like, okay, well, maybe I just messed up. So I had to go somewhere. So I got in the car, I drove around the block, and I got to the stop sign, and a raven, not a crow, a raven, an enormous raven, flies out of nowhere and flies across the front of my car and lands on the sidewalk that's on the driver's side adjacent to me. And we just stared at each other, and there was no noise. And we just stared at each other. And I just had this sense of, don't worry about it.
Right.
Right. That it will, you know, things will happen the way they're supposed to happen. Just be patient. And then it spread its wings and flew away, you know, and that happened because I invoked the Norse interface right. to the universe. Later, I realized, you know, I might as well just cut to the chase and interface the universe directly. But when I did it in a Norse fashion, then the answer I got back was Norse. And it right. was significant because the raven is Odin. And it was like, okay, person you were interfacing with, that didn't work. You know, the big guy's coming down. And I felt really good for a long time. And I still feel content with, you know, when these things are meant to happen, they will happen. And I don't push it. I just, I, frankly, I just say, you know what, the universe is going to make it happen when it's supposed to happen, and I just kind of deal with it.
And I wish that we had more time. Really have like five more minutes. And I want to give you a couple of minutes to share your contact information. But Olaf, I really enjoyed this conversation, like I enjoy all our conversations. I had Schwartz on a little earlier on the other station, and he said to say hello, so I told him I will. So hello.
Okay. Hello Schwartz. Back.
And,
hello, Tim Schwartz.
I really want to have you on more often, or we could talk offline, but I really enjoyed this conversation. How can people locate you and tap into your wonderful discoveries and make use of your services?
Well, number one, my phone is always on for you. So you got my number. You call me anytime you want.
Thank you.
So, no problem. So you can find me very easily on Facebook. It's just Olaf Phillips. Just search me. There's only two Olaf Phillipses in the world. As far as we both can tell, we've discussed it. We have a club. But yeah, just search for me. I'm on there. Send me a friend request. Send me your message. I'm also on Instagram, Paranoia Mags with a Z. You can follow my misadventures in Fortianism and paranoid conspiracyism and baking. I bake, so I put my baking on there too.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I check that on Facebook. I check up every now and then, see how you're doing, and I see that you're baking and stuff like that, and that's really cool.
Yeah.
I started cooking again recently also. I like making Mexican food with Greek spicing. So
I want to try that. That sounds
good. We have to try it.
Yeah,
and
when this COVID stuff's over, I'm going to come out there.
Awesome, or I'll come out there, or both. Olaf, thanks again. I wish you well in all your endeavors, and I look forward to our next conversation. I will give you a call this weekend.
Sounds good. And same to you, Hercules. You know, keep getting out there and living that mythic life and helping other people to live mythically for them as well.
I don't know how to do anything else, so I most certainly will. Thanks to everybody who joined us tonight, too, whether it be live as we're speaking or later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. We'll conclude with something mythic, The Golden Bough by Virginia. What power?
golden bough.